Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
What if they had a huge market panic and nobody panicked?
At the Tone, there will be 8 days, 5 hours, 59 minutes exactly until the debt limit is broken.
From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It's Monday, today the 25th of July. Good to have you with us. And I got to tell you, this was a day of anticipation, of thinking that surely, after the events of late Friday afternoon, surely now the markets would speak. What we got instead was, and not to exaggerate at all, but what we got instead was a massive collective yawn. Nothing. Not even after Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and House Speaker John Boehner held installment number 5,348 of the regular Washington series we've come to know and love as dueling press conferences this afternoon. Traders are either cautious or they're confused because nobody can figure out what they ought to do now. Our senior business correspondent Bob Moon has the story.
One analyst I spoke to today compared the financial world to a deer in the headlights, not sure which way to turn. At California-based Pacific Wealth Management, investment advisor Robert Pagliarini says all this uncertainty has many Americans in a holding pattern.
I don't think people, investors, really know what to do with this.
Pagliarini says he's been preparing for months, moving into more defensive positions in gold and commodities, reducing exposure to government bonds, and increasing positions in cash. But he says for now, sitting tight is the prudent thing to do.
There's all of this uncertainty, and I just don't think anyone can predict what's going to happen. And so therefore, I cannot recommend that someone make some big dramatic change to their portfolio now.
New Jersey-based investment advisor Jeffrey Sika says he's been getting worried calls from clients reacting to the scare talk coming out of Washington.
That fear is present from people who rely on their Social Security check all the way up to the people who are small business owners who are facing the potential higher taxes. I find it hard to believe that the market has done as well as it's done during all this uncertainty.
Wall Street was still indicating today it believes a deal will be struck, but there are signs of less money flowing into the stock market reflected in weak volume, and Oppenheimer Treasuries analyst Alan DeRose says the worries are spreading to the general economy.
It does give people pause in terms of making investment decisions. Possible outcomes are very diverse. People just are not involved in the same level they would be if this issue were behind us.
Economist Ed Yardeni says the overall economy could end up taking a hit no matter what Washington does now.
Clearly, if consumers are going to reduce some of their spending over the next few weeks because of concerns about how this drama plays out in Washington, then that will depress sales, which then might cause businesses to hold back.
Yardeni says that might lead to a hold off in hiring, and he blames it all on what he calls political theater. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
There are now, after a lot of weekend staff work, I'm sure, two competing proposals on the... Oh, wait. Hang on just one sec.
At the Tone, there will be 8 days, 5 hours, 54 minutes, and 30 seconds until the debt limit is broken.
All right, so anyway, there are now two competing proposals on the table, one from House Republicans, one from Senate Democrats. The president's going to speak later tonight. But if you want to know what the markets are saying, you got to talk to a guy who speaks marketese. For that, we've got Bill Gross on the line. He runs the biggest bond fund in the world for PIMCO. That's the Pacific Investment Management Company down the road from us. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Go back to Friday afternoon with me. I have to confess, I got a little excited because I figured that was the time the markets were going to say, all right, Washington gets it. There's going to be a panic and everything's going to go kerflooey come Monday morning. And here we are and nothing happened. Why aren't the markets doing more?
Well, I was in the same camp. I have a sense in terms of an explanation, though, that this was never a Sunday evening liquidity event a la Lehman Brothers or the TARP, because in this case, liquidity has not been threatened. There's simply lots of money available, whereas back then, investment positions by necessity were being liquidated. That's one particular difference. The second one might be that, you know, in the stock market, which is only down 0.25% today, these are global companies and not necessarily U.S. companies, and they continue to benefit from Asian growth, which is picking up, and are less dependent on the situation in the United States.
Yeah, but wait a minute, because for weeks now, the White House and Secretary Geithner and other folks have been saying the markets need stability. They need to know what's going on the theory that, you know, the market talks to us, right? And you're one of the people the markets talk to. You've figured out how to decipher the markets. What are they saying, in fact?
Well, today they're saying all is well and or the crisis will be resolved in a constructive fashion. You know, and I suspect it will. I think there'll be some resolution to the debt ceiling. The debt ceiling will be raised and we'll move on to bigger things. The bigger things, however, would be the actual state of the budget deficit and whether or not it can be reduced over time. So we shall see from that point.
Your colleague, Mohammed Al-Aryan, who runs PIMCO, came out over the weekend with a statement that said, you know what, AAA rating is in essence, as good as gone because we've been dithering so much. Do you buy that? Do you agree with that?
Oh, I think so.
You were pretty quick to say that. That's a little disheartening that you agree so quickly.
Well, we've been looking at this for a long time. We think the United States has substantial problems. We're comparing it this morning, actually, in our investment committee to Euroland countries, to Japan, to the United Kingdom. And, you know, it's actually close to the top of the list in terms of problems. We have a present value of future liabilities, and I know this is complicated, but I'm talking here of Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. You put them all together, basically of $60 trillion, and that's about six times the current debt of the United States. In other words, it means we owe that much money. We're just not obligated to pay it yet.
You're an economics guy. You're a markets guy. But clearly all of this hinges on politics. Do I hear you right that the markets basically believe what's going on in Washington now is all politics and posturing and they're going to fix it because they have to?
The markets do believe there'll be a fix to the debt ceiling. Whether or not they believe there'll be a fix to our budget crisis is another matter. I think what this debt crisis demonstrates more than anything, though, is the dysfunctionality of the American political system and what it bodes for future years. A parliamentary system like Canada or the UK has can produce a rather immediate thumbs up or thumbs down on fiscal direction. But in the United States, a divided Congress and a perpetual election mode lead to inaction.
Bill Gross, co-chief investment officer at PIMCO down in Newport Beach. Bill, thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right, so after all that anticipation, the major indices lost less than 1% today. We will have the details when we do the numbers.
At the tone, there will be 8 days, 5 hours, 51 minutes exactly until the debt limit is broken.
I'm going to set up this next story by doing something they tell you never to do when you're learning how to do business coverage. I'm going to start with a bunch of numbers, so stay with me. In June, the entire U.S. economy added just 18,000 jobs. In the past 10 days, two big layoffs have completely neutralized that pickup. Between them, Cisco and Borders announced 18,000 layoffs. Today, there was another one. Research in Motion, the Canadian maker of Blackberries, is going to cut 2,000 people, including some in California, Florida, and Illinois. You know, the Labor Department has a word for it when something like this happens. They're called mass layoffs. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports.
Research in Motion follows Cisco and Borders in announcing big job cuts this month. July will still see more jobs created than lost, but growth in the private sector is weak at best. John Challenger is CEO of the outplacement firm Challenger Gray and Christmas.
The private sector particularly is continuing to create new jobs. The problem is the government sector is in recession, losing jobs, and every month mitigates some of the jobs that have been gained in the private sector.
Cuts in public spending can hurt private companies like aerospace that depend on government contracts. Sylvia Allegretto is an economist with the Institute for Research on Labor and Employment at UC Berkeley. She says federal, state, and local governments should be boosting employment in order to support a recovery in the private sector.
But of course, we're seeing the exact opposite of that. We're seeing that the public sector, which is down about 500,000 jobs over this recession, continues to shed jobs at an alarming rate.
Instead of focusing on the budget deficit, Allegretto says Congress should be concerned with the jobs deficit. The country needs to add about 11 million more jobs just to get us back to a pre-recession unemployment rate. But major cuts in public spending could undermine job growth, essentially kicking the fragile economy before it's back on its feet. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
A couple of weeks ago, we ran our China series, the five-year plan we called it, about how that country has changed over the past 5 years. Today, we're going to turn that around and ask where China sees itself going in the next 5 years. What we know so far is that corporate China's investment around the world, with government support, it should be said, is about to explode with investments and acquisitions and corporate partnerships. So is that scary, or is it good, or is it both of the above? We sent our former Shanghai Bureau Chief Scott Tong to New York City to find out.
As metaphors go, it's hard to beat this. A bridge in our financial capital, named after our first Treasury Secretary, crumbling and getting fixed with Chinese money.
The project that we're doing is called the Alexander Hamilton Bridge Reconstruction.
That's Chris Larson at construction firm Halmar International. It's teamed up with a Chinese firm on this $400 million bridge rebuild. Every day, right above these workers' heads, 188,000 vehicles rumble between Harlem and the Bronx.
The Alexander Hamilton Bridge is very close to the George Washington Bridge, and also as part of I-95, brings a lot of commuter traffic. And obviously, with the Yankee games, it just doubles the amount of traffic in the area.
Yankee Stadium is steps away, where these two companies also built a subway stop. So why a Chinese partner? It turns out it is the designated financial hitter. China Construction America is part of a $54 billion behemoth that takes in more revenue than Caterpillar or Coca-Cola or Disney. So the Chinese brought the cash, the Americans the local expertise. Oh, and the union workers.
My name's Gene Flood. I'm from the Bronx.
Gene Flood has been with Iron Workers Local 40 for three decades. Never seen a paycheck quite like this.
Symbols. It's signed in Chinese symbols. That's the first time I've ever seen that. That was a little strange, but other than that, the money's good and we appreciate the work.
A little strange? Get used to it. Chinese capital is coming. $5 billion came last year, and that could double every year. MIT's Ed Steinfeld says corporate China's got an issue. Too much cash.
These companies are frequently looking for things to do with their cash, and going abroad, particularly to the United States, is an appealing option. They view going abroad as a critical learning experience.
Though China already has learned a ton, given all the building out in China.
Subways, high-speed rail, airports, power plants, these are all being built in China. And in those kind of industries, you learn by building.
Though, yes, the Chinese know their forklifts. Quality is a whole nother thing. China Construction shipped over Chinese steel for part of the bridge, but Chris Larson at Halmar found problems with the welding in the early batches. Do over.
We refabricated entire sections of a bridge. Frankly, then what we learned is to reject it in China before it even got on the sea.
Larson figures the lesson is China won't be an overnight success.
I see it taking decades. You know, I don't see any of them being major competition for us here in the United States. You know, probably for the rest of my career, at least.
That's debatable. For now, though, there's politics. Chinese steel is also being used to rebuild San Francisco's Bay Bridge. You may have heard the outrage over outsourcing of steel jobs. New York iron worker Julia Murray.
If it means that our unemployment level is higher, that to me feels a little backwards.
Protectionism feels good to block Chinese stuff and Chinese money. But Dan Rosen at the Peterson Institute for International Economics says beware.
If we don't put a lid on that and manage it over time, you know, many, many billions of dollars worth of investments in American communities can be chased away.
We put this question to China Construction America, but they didn't take any questions. That's how it works in China. But here, talk to the hand could backfire on Chinese firms.
They're going to be tarnished by perceptions that there's something unscrupulous about how Chinese companies operate.
For skeptics, Rosen says Chinese companies, even government-owned firms, tend to come for the same reason everyone else does, to try to make a profit. In the Bronx, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Coming up, putting the stuff of science fiction to good use here and now.
If I bump into someone on the street or someone I meet, they say, oh, what's that? And they're always completely fascinated.
But first,
at the tone, there will be 8 days, 5 hours, 45 minutes, 15 seconds until the debt limit is broken.
Let's do the numbers. Yeah, so it's the wah-wah trombones, but really, you could make a case for the happy music today. In light trading, as Bob Moon said, the Dow Industrial sank just 88 points after the weekend that was. That's 0.7%, closed at 12,592. The NASDAQ deleted 16 points, about 0.5%, 2842 at the bell. The S&P 500 down 7 points, also 0.5%, ended things at 1337. Healthcare provider HCA Holdings drained 19% today. Admissions are up, but its medical procedures have been less complex and therefore less profitable. Bad news also for other hospitals. Health Management Associates lost 5%. Universal Health Services and Community Health Systems each lost more than 4.5% today. TD Ameritrade gained 1.75% on rumors it's going to buy the online brokerage E-Trade. E-Trade up more than 5.5% today. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to exactly 3.00%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org. From the Marketplace Statebook, here's a look at events coming up Tuesday. In Washington, the Commerce Department reports on sales of new homes for June. How do you feel about the economy? The Conference Board releases its monthly Consumer Confidence Index. And on July 26, 1990, the Americans with Disabilities Act was signed into law by President George H.W. Bush. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. While the wrangling goes on and on in Washington over the debt ceiling, there is news today of another deal the American people have been waiting for. The NFL Players Association has approved in principle a new deal with league owners. That means the 4.5-month lockout is over. There will be football this fall, ready or not. Wait, what? What's that sound you're hearing? Oh, that's a big sigh of relief from television executives. Here's Marketplace's Jeff Horwich.
At every major network, it's time to sound the trumpets. ESPN Monday Night Football. Fox NFL Sunday. The NFL on CBS. And NBC Sunday Night Football. Along with DirecTV, the networks pay $4 billion a year to carry NFL games. That spins out into an estimated $12 billion of economic activity, a big chunk of which is ad revenues. Brad Adgate is with Horizon Media.
Those ratings are irreplaceable. There's nothing the networks can put on that can come remotely close to what the NFL brings to advertisers and viewers.
One in every 10 U.S. homes is watching ESPN's Monday Night Football. Sunday night games allow struggling NBC to remain relevant. At a time of fracturing TV audiences, Adgate says the NFL is the exception.
They really avoided a revenue and financial catastrophe for a lot of people by getting this done relatively quickly.
Football is so hard to replace, the networks didn't even bother with a backup plan for advertisers. Darren Marshall is with the sports marketing agency Revolution.
The way that they've proceeded with this is to basically pretend that the lockout didn't exist. You might have thought that advertisers would have avoided the NFL because of the uncertainty, but ad sales in the NFL are at record levels.
Marshall expects the networks to bid considerably more when broadcast rights are up for renewal in 2013. That's good news for the players, whose new contract gets them a much bigger cut of that money. I'm Jeff Horwich for Marketplace.
Here's something to interrupt the relaxing summer of a lot of high schoolers out there. It's usually fall of senior year or so that the college search begins in earnest. But really, why wait? This week, all 31 private colleges in the state of Indiana are opening their doors to prospective students. A lot of states, in fact, now have some kind of private college week. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Amy Scott explains it's all about perceptions.
Private college is expensive, right? Look at Hanover College in southeastern Indiana. The liberal arts campus sits on a bluff overlooking the Ohio River Valley. Tuition is $28,000, but
that sticker price is frequently not the price, not anywhere close to the price that students pay.
That's Hanover's president, Sue DeWine. With financial aid from the college, the average student pays roughly half price, not counting grants from the government and other sources. It's still more than Indiana's flagship public university, but within reach. DeWine says that's part of the message Hanover and other private colleges in the state have for students this week. She used to work at a state university.
I was a faculty member in higher education for 25 years. And I had no idea that we could afford a private school for our own children. And I know in that, I would have done things differently.
Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Virginia all have some version of private college week. Some of these schools struggled to keep enrollments up during the downturn. Paul Hassan represents the competition. He's with the Association of Public and Land-Grant Universities. Hassan says there are more than enough students to go around.
There's just no way for all of the students who want to go to college today to attend public universities, certainly not the flagship public universities.
Indiana's public universities will have their moment, too. College Go Week in the fall promotes all the state's colleges. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
A couple of weeks ago, President Obama awarded only the second Medal of Honor to have been earned by a living American soldier from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. That in and of itself is extraordinary. What happened next was perhaps even more so. A simple handshake between the president and Sergeant First Class Leroy Petrie, whose right hand had been blown off and replaced by a prosthetic device made by a small Scottish company called Touch Bionics. From the European desk in London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard has the story.
Patrick Kane lost his left hand as an infant, so performing this small, everyday task is a major achievement.
Make a loop in my right hand, go round it, grab it through there, undo that, grab the loop, and pull.
14-year-old Patrick has just tied his shoelace using his iLimb, the world's first electrically powered prosthetic hand with fully flexing fingers and a rotatable thumb.
People really love it at school, and it's always fascinating people. Whenever if I bump into someone on the street or someone I meet, they say, oh, what's that? And they're always completely fascinated because it's so, people don't expect it to be this good.
The iLimb was developed here at Touch Bionics, a small medical technology company in Scotland.
Let's run this hand through our final testing, Lorraine.
Okay.
Before the iLimb was launched 4 years ago, the most advanced prosthetic hands were three-fingered claws. The iLimb, says production manager Chuck Orzikowski, has five digits with knuckles and joints all computerized.
In that knuckle block are wire connections. And those wires are connected to an onboard computer that rests in the back of the chassis. We also have to attach what's called a thumb rotator, which allows our thumb to swivel much like our own thumb swivels.
The hand is activated by muscle activity in the arm. Users learn how to flex their muscles to send the right signals to the iLimb's onboard computer. Danny Sullivan of Touch Bionics says the key to the hand's dexterity, as with the human hand, is the flexibility of the fingers and the opposable thumb.
In this orientation, the thumb is able to grasp a plate or to pass a business card or to grasp a key to turn in a lock. We have users who are confident to pick up an egg with their hand like this.
The hand is expensive, $50,000. That might explain why they sell only 500 a year. But the company believes the potential market could be 25,000 a year. It's just a matter of getting the message across. Last week's bionic handshake in the White House might help.
A very iconic moment, we thought, when I saw the cover of the Wall Street Journal with the hand of President Obama reaching out to grasp an ILIM hand, and certainly one that I think brought it home to us how far this technology has come from the research stages to now being out there in the world.
The ILIM comes with a very lifelike simulated skin covering, but the soldier at that ceremony and many other younger users don't wear it. They're happy to show off the bionic hand in all its metallic glory, proud of its futuristic appearance. At Touch Bionics in Livingston, Scotland, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today, you know, one of our producers suggested over the weekend that had Washington been able to get this whole debt thing solved by last night, would have been pretty much like every episode of The West Wing ever. That, of course, didn't happen, but while we do pretty well at getting complicated economic policy questions into short, easy-to-understand stories, ain't nobody who does it like Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah, you know, the immediate collapse of the U.S. economy, followed by Japan sinking into the sea, followed by a worldwide depression the likes of which no mortal can imagine, followed by week two.
So this debt ceiling thing is routine or the end of the world?
Both.
At The Tone, there will be 8 days, 5 hours, 32 minutes exactly until the debt limit is broken.
Who says public radio can't play in the cable television wars? We don't need no stinking countdown clock. All right, that's Marketplace from APM American Public Media. Today, the Dow sank 88 points, 0.7%. The NASDAQ off 16. The S&P 500 down 7 points. Our producers include Avishai Artsy, Millie Jefferson, Megan Larson, and Fiona Ng. You can tune in tomorrow to the Marketplace Morning Report for the latest in business and economic news. And coming up next time back here, payday is usually a good thing, right?
There's a large spike in mortality on the first of the month.
Oh. More Freakonomics Radio. Next time, I'm Kai Rizdal. Do hope you can join us for that tomorrow. This is APM, American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.